Welcome to American Soundways. I'm your host, Trip Clark. In the next hour, we'll take a look at the musical contributions of what was once one of America's premier textile towns. And along the way, we'll pay tribute to a decorated journalist and one heck of a nice guy. We'll look back at some monumental field recordings, and we'll talk with one of the founding members of the Jefferson Airplane. And then, of course, we'll listen to a few very talented local artists. That's all coming up on American Soundways. We're headed south to a place that more than 200 years ago earned a reputation for its feisty revolutionaries. It experienced a gold rush even before California, and today is one of the world's greatest financial centers. Musically, it's had a hand in shaping much of the sound we hear today, and it's considered the de facto hub of the fastest-growing spectator sport in the U.S.
Gentlemen, start your engines!
Nothing could be finer than to be in Carolina in the morning.
That's right, we're headed to the South Central Piedmont region, Mecklenburg County, Charlotte, North Carolina. Over the course of the next hour, we're going to look at some significant musical events in the history of Charlotte. But before we do, let's listen to a song that has a connection to Charlotte, and then later in the show we'll discuss what that connection is. Here's REM on American Soundways. Originally a settlement of the Catawba Native Americans in the mid-1700s, two Indian trading paths intersected in the area that's now known as Charlotte, North Carolina. These trading paths led thousands of Scotch, Irish, and German pioneers south from Pennsylvania, Delaware, and Maryland. During the Revolutionary War, Charlotte was an encampment site for both the American and the British armies. The town of Charlotte and the people of Charlotte, or Charlottesians as they're called, earned a reputation as feisty revolutionaries, and the town was called a hornet's nest by an irritated Lord General Cornwallis, who was quoted as saying, "There's a rebel behind every bush. It's a veritable nest of hornets." There does seem to be some dispute as to what General Cornwallis called it, but either way, it wasn't pretty. And on October 12, 1780, Cornwallis hightailed it out of Charlotte. Gold mining played a pivotal role in the early development of Charlotte, even before the California Gold Rush of the mid-1800s. In 1838, the U.S. Congress established a branch U.S. mint there because of all the gold deposits found in the area, partly spurred by the discovery of a 17-pound gold nugget east of Charlotte in 1799. For the first 50 years of gold mining in the U.S., North Carolina was the nation's leading gold-producing state, all contributing factors to Charlotte's emergence as a major financial center today. For many decades, the Charlotte area was one of this country's centers of textile manufacturing. Textiles ranked first among the leading industries of North Carolina. Within a radius of 100 miles of Charlotte, there were 700 mills.
When I was a little bitty baby, my mama would rock me in the cradle in them old cotton field back home.
As the mills grew, more and more people moved from the rural areas to work either at the mills or at the many other supporting industries which grew up around them. For thousands of people, the mills and the mill towns were a way of life which lasted for several generations. Then in 1892, a bug about the size of an eraser head hopped a freighter from Mexico and for more than 100 years wreaked havoc on the U.S. cotton industry. Estimates of crop losses and control costs due to the boll weevil total more than $22 billion. The boll weevil has inspired dozens of songs, like the boll weevil stomp, "Let Me Be Your Boll Weevil," the boll weevil rag, and the boll weevil blues. Artists from Brooke Benton and Leadbelly to Tex Ritter and Eddie Cochran have sung about the pesky critter. Many historians consider the boll weevil second only to the Civil War as the catalyst that forced significant social and economic changes in the South. Areas that had been almost completely dependent on cotton production were forced to diversify agriculturally, stimulating industrial development and stabilizing the South's predominantly rural economy. By the late 1920s, the country was in the grips of the Depression, and the phonograph industry, like many businesses, had fallen on difficult times. Particularly hard hit was country music, since many of the people who purchased country music were the most affected by the massive job losses. Record companies looked to reduce costs, and rather than pay to have performers travel to New York or Chicago to record, representatives would carry or ship recording equipment to the southern areas to record the musicians. As a result, field recordings began to take place throughout the South. In 1927, the Victor Talking Machine Company set up shop at the old Hotel Charlotte for the first of what was to become many field recording trips over the course of more than a decade. By the time the record labels had packed up shop and moved to Nashville, in large part because of the recording studios wanting to be near the Grand Ole Opry, dozens of legendary artists had cut wax in the Hotel Charlotte. Artists such as the Delmore Brothers, legendary country balladeer Kelly Harrell, bluesman Luke Jordan, the Carolina Tar Heels, fiddlin' Arthur Smith, not to be confused with Arthur Guitar Boogie Smith, one's a fiddler, one's a guitar player, the Johnson Family Singers, Snuffy Jenkins, a pioneer in the three-finger roll on the banjo, Uncle Dave Macon, the Tennessee Ramblers, J.E. and Wade Maynard, and You Are My Sunshine author Jimmy Davis. Additionally, two of the most legendary names in country music took part in the recording sessions at the Hotel Charlotte. The first is the father of bluegrass, Bill Monroe, who launched his recording career in Charlotte in February 1936. Born into a musical family in Kentucky, Bill Monroe embodied the genre of bluegrass. In fact, the name bluegrass was taken from Monroe's band, the Bluegrass Boys. Bill Monroe once described bluegrass as music with, quote, a hard drive to it. It's Scotch bagpipes and old-time fiddling. It's Methodist and holiness and Baptist. It's blues and jazz, and it has a high lonesome sound. It's plain music that tells a good story. It's played from my heart to your heart, and it will touch you. Bluegrass is music that matters. End quote. The other legendary act that recorded at the Hotel Charlotte was the Carter Family. Over the course of 7 years in Charlotte, the Carter Family had recorded 29 sides in all. Arguably the most influential group in country music history, and responsible for a style of picking referred to as Carter picking, they've influenced folk, blues, and rock artists alike, including Bob Dylan, the Kingston Trio, Emmylou Harris, Doc Watson, and countless others. One of the bands currently making their way around Charlotte is the Avett Brothers. Now, I'm no music critic, but when you listen to the Avett Brothers, there's something really beautiful, really pure, and really fun about what's going on. They're the kind of band where you could sit your 25-year-old alt-country thrasher next to your Ernest Tubb-loving 87-year-old grandma, and they'd both be tapping their feet, drinking PBR, and grinning ear to ear. In the wake of forefathers like Arthur Smith and Don Gibson, the Mainers, and Maybelle Carter, the Avett Brothers are a suitable pick to lead the next generation to water. The Avett Brothers are brothers Seth and Scott Avett and Bob Crawford. Here's the song Swept Away from their release Mignonette.
Set my life a whirling, darling.
That was Swept Away by the Avett Brothers from their CD Mignonette.
One, two, three.
Do you fear this man's invention that they call atomic power?
In the 1930s and 40s, Charlotte native Fred Kirby was a renowned cowboy singer, string band player, and a songwriter. He was so moved by the dropping of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima in August 1945, he wrote a song entitled Atomic Power, which has been recorded by a number of artists over the years, from Sid Selvage and Southern Culture on the Skids to Raul Mallo and this version by Uncle Tupelo.
Will you shout or will you cry when the fire rains from on high? Are you ready for that great atomic power?
If there's one thing Charlotte's become synonymous with over the years, it's NASCAR. Charlotte is the de facto hub of stock car racing. Actually, Mooresville, North Carolina is officially the home of NASCAR, but consider Charlotte the corporate headquarters. NASCAR is a $5 billion, that's billion with a B, dollar a year industry in North Carolina. NASCAR is to North Carolina what oranges are to Florida. NASCAR originated more than 70 years ago in the Appalachian foothills. Prohibition was an incentive for people to turn to bootlegging to make a living. The Depression gave them even more of an incentive to give it a try. Many bootleggers were poor farmers struggling to make ends meet, and bootlegging gave them an opportunity to make money to feed their families. After souping up cars and outrunning the law all week, the weekends were a time to see who was the best driver and who had the fastest car. And a multi-billion dollar a year industry was born.
No, he didn't slam you, he didn't bump you, he didn't nudge you, he rubbed you. And rubbing, son, is racing.
It's been said that Liverpool had the Beatles and Charlotte had the Briarhoppers. From 1935 until 1951, the Briarhoppers were staples on Charlotte's 50,000-watt WBT radio. Originally assembled at the request of Consolidated Drug Trade Products to help sell cough medicine and tonic, the WBT Briarhoppers would begin the show with their signature call to the crowd.
Do y'all know what it is?
No, what is it, Hogan?
It's Briarhopper time.
Wait till the sun shines, Nelly.
The Briarhoppers were so popular in the southern towns where they toured, playing movie houses and churches, that in their heyday got as many as 10,000 fan letters a week and had to form two separate bands just to meet all of their touring demands. The Briarhoppers continued to tour for many years, and two of the original members, Arvel Hogan and Roy Whitey Grant, were recently recognized by Nashville's Country Music Foundation as the longest-running duo in country music. When it comes to bluegrass, it's pretty tough to talk about it without evoking reverentially a name that's almost synonymous with the style, Earl Scruggs. From the small town of Flint Hill, North Carolina, just outside of Charlotte, Earl Scruggs is probably the most copied banjo picker in bluegrass. Earl developed a unique style of syncopated three-finger playing that left his audiences in awe. For almost 20 years, Earl Scruggs and his partner Lester Flatt ruled the world of bluegrass. In 1969, Flatt and Scruggs won a Grammy for Scruggs' instrumental, Foggy Mountain Breakdown. As much as the Charlotte region of North Carolina has been a breeding ground of legendary country and bluegrass music and musicians, it would be unfair to overlook its legacy of Piedmont blues. Born in Wadesboro, North Carolina around 1908, Fulton Allen, also known as Blind Boy Fuller, left a musical contribution that has spanned generations. His recording career lasted only 6 years before he died at just 34 years old. Developing his skills playing house parties and on street corners, Blind Boy Fuller became one of the most popular recorded Piedmont artists and among the most influential Piedmont artists of all time. Some 20 years after Blind Boy Fuller's death, the blues was being rediscovered by a new generation of young listeners. Among those was an influential founding member of the San Francisco-based Jefferson Airplane, guitarist Yorma Kalkinen. We'll be right back to talk with Jorma Kaukinen here on American Soundways.